a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
South Dakota House representatives will now come to order. Leading us in prayer today will be Pastor Brad Urbach from the Pier 4 Pier Ministerial Association. Leading our pledge today will be Pages Caleb Fink and Brittany Fisher of Tripp.
We do thank you for your loving and patient service to our state in these days, and God bless you in your journey home today. Holy and gracious Father, we do indeed thank you for our legislature that gathers both in the Senate and in the House this day. We particularly ask you to be with the men and women of this House as we go about the final budget process, as we tie up those loose ends. It's been a full and a patient process, and we thank you, Father, for patience with one another and thoughts shared and strategies shared. In the end, it works well, and so we're very grateful for these men and women. We ask you to bless them to stay in the session, be with them as they journey back to their homes, and we pray for safety in their journeys back home as they go back to their families and have some time with them as well. So we thank you for them. Bless them. These things I ask in the name of Christ. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Abdallah, Blake, Boland, Boomgarden, Bruner, Carson, Conflict, Cronin, Dielstra, Dennett, Dryden, Elliott, Fargent, Fikert, Feinstein, Gisland, Gosch, Greenfield, Hager, Hanson, Hawley, Heike, Hoffman, Hubble, Hunhoff, Hunt, Ironcloud, Jensen, Jones, Junkie, Killer, Kirkby, Kirschman, Kochek, Kopp, List, Lucas, Lust, Magstead, Miller, Mosier, Munsterman, Nelson, Nordstrup, Olsen, Perry, Romkamer, Rosen, Russell, Schaefer, Schrempf, Sigtazad, Sly, Solem, Steele, Street, Strickers, Torno, Tulson, Turbeville, Van Gerpen, Vanneman, Vanner, Vertio, White, Wick, Wilson, Wick, Wismer, Speaker, Roush.
Here.
Mr. Speaker, a quorum is present.
It sounded that way. Approval of the journal.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Chief Clerk of the House has had under consideration the House Journal of the 36th day. All errors, typographical or otherwise, are duly marked in the temporary journal for correction, and we hereby move the adoption of the report. Respectfully submitted, Val Roush, Chair.
All those in favor of approval of the journal signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Same as us.
They're wise.
I thought they would be. They'd see it our way. I knew they would. Communications.
March 10th, 2011. Mr. Speaker and members of the House of Representatives, I have the honor to inform you that on March 10, 2011, I approved House Bills 1034, 1040, 1053, 1069, 1149, 1155, 1157, 1174, 1175, 1230, and 1256, and the same have been deposited in the office of the Secretary of State. Respectfully submitted, Dennis Dugard, Governor.
Motions and resolutions.
Representative Lust moves that a committee of three on the part of the House be appointed to meet with a light committee on the part of the Senate pertaining to fixing the time of adjournment, sine die, for the 86th legislative session.
All those in favor of the Lust motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Speaker appoints to such committee Representatives Roush, Lust, and Hunhoff.
Representative Lust moves that a committee of three on the part of the House be appointed to meet the like committee on the part of the Senate to wait upon His Excellency the Governor to inform him that the legislature has completed its labors and is ready to adjourn sine die, and to ascertain if he has any further communications to make to the legislature.
All those in favor of the Lust motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Speaker appoints to such committees Representatives Roush, Lust, and Hunhoff.
Representative Lust moves that when we adjourn today, we adjourn to convene at 10 a.m. Monday, March 28th, the 38th legislative day.
All those in favor of the Lust motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Consideration of committee reports.
Representative Lust moves that the report of the Standing Committee on Appropriations on House Bill 1251 be adopted.
All those in favor of the Lust motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 1251, an act to appropriate money for the ordinary expenses of the legislative, judicial, and executive departments of the state, the expenses of state institutions, interest on the public debt, and for common schools.
House Bill 1251, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the body, I bring before you today House Bill 1251, the General Appropriations Bill for the fiscal year 2012. This bill represents months of commitment and energy by a team dedicated to bringing you a product that best represents the very culture of South Dakota. A culture that is proud of its heritage, work ethic, and independent thought, but also a culture that comes to the aid of a friend or a neighbor in a time of need. We have a willing attitude and a generous spirit. I would be remiss to not thank the many individuals that made this bill possible, so I will ask for your indulgence for just a few moments. I begin with the House Appropriations members. They have put in numerous hours hearing testimony at budget briefings, researching bills, and meeting to debate the various issues affecting our budget. Each member represents the various sectors of our economy: agriculture, banking, healthcare, accounting, education, private enterprise. I would like to thank Representatives Junkie, White, Romkema, Dryden, and Bolin for the experience they brought and the time and effort they put into this session. Although all were new to appropriations, with two new to the legislature, what they lacked in legislative experience was far outweighed by the years of life experience each brought to the committee. I would especially like to voice my gratitude to Vice Chair Representative Carson. The duties he performed and his skills as the great analyzer of bills lessened the burden for all of us. But I am most appreciative of his friendship and his humor during this challenging session. Thanks to Representative Wismer from across the aisle, your strong accounting background and diligent pursuit of the facts during our hearing is most appreciated. And what can I say about Representative Dennert? He informed us early in the session that he had more years of appropriations experience than all the Republicans combined. Your easy demeanor, institutional knowledge, and cooperative spirit mean a great deal to me, and I thank you for that. Additionally, I'd like to thank Speaker Roush for honoring Representative Carson's and my request for committee members. They have exceeded even our lofty expectations. Thank you, Majority Leader Lust, and your leadership team for your support and the autonomy you gave to us to do our job. From across the rotunda, the Senate appropriators brought an overwhelming amount of experience. Their insights, questions, and relentless pursuit of answers tied together the loose ends and kept the process moving. I thank Senator Brown for all his unseen work that brought about solutions to complex problems, and Senator Tiedemann for his expert counsel and advice. Without him, the appropriations process train may have run off the tracks. The governor and his staff were instrumental in addressing many challenging problems. Thanks go to Cabinet Member Deb Bowman and Commissioner Jason Dilges and their staff. Each was instrumental in giving us the information we needed, and their cooperation is much appreciated. The LRC staff, Fred, Aaron, Sue, Annie, and Terry. None of this would have been possible without you. Your fiscal analysis and the agency summaries are invaluable to the process, and we thank you. Thank you to the Appropriations Secretaries Barb and Lisa. Many early mornings and late nights were spent keeping us on track and our computers updated. Lastly, I must thank my wife, Joan, for her patience and perseverance while I was here in Pierre. From garter snakes in the bedroom to baby calves warming up in the kitchen, her life has also had challenges this legislative session. However, she has assured me that all will be forgiven if we can see Willie Nelson next month in Rapid City. So, Willie, get ready. Your biggest fan is on her way. Let's get to the budget. We have achieved our goal and have eliminated the structural deficit that we faced in January by passing a budget that does not utilize reserves or one-time funding to pay for ongoing expenses, along with special and continuous appropriations totaling $30.2 million. The total fund spending for fiscal year 12 will be $1,150,285,248, which will allow our fiscal year 12 budget to be balanced both nominally and structurally. General fund spending in fiscal year 12 budget, including stimulus swaps, is broken down as follows. Education, $557.2 million, represents 48% of the general funds. Taking care of people, $428.1 million, represents 37%. Protecting the public, $133.6 million, represents 11%. And all the rest of state government, $50.3 million, is only 4%.
Thank you.
The change in fiscal year 12 over fiscal year 11 budget is reduction of $41.3 million in general funds, a reduction of $59.5 million in federal fund expenditure authority, increase of $10.3 million in other fund expenditure authority, leaving a total reduction of $90.5 million in total funds. We have adopted a budget of $1,120,088,080 in general funds, $1,851,059,794 in federal funds, $988,027,568 in other funds, leaving us a total budget of $3,959,175,442. Many of our major accomplishments would include nearly every agency took a general fund budget cut of 10% or more. The general funding for K-12 school districts was spared from the 10% reductions. Senate Bill 152 allowed for an ongoing increase of $65.81 per student, higher than the governor's recommended amount. This combined with House Bill 1110, which appropriates $97.01 per student for fiscal year 12 on a one-time basis, allows for a total increase of $162.82 per student, more than the governor's recommended budget, or about a 6.6% reduction. We were able to continue funding K-12 special education at the same levels as last year without any reduction. We were able to continue funding sparse school districts at $1.65 million funding level for fiscal year 12. We were able to give the Board of Regents a $1.5 million one-time general funds to help ease the amount of their cuts and to help minimize the tuition increase. We have mitigated the governor's proposed 10% rate cuts to all providers in order to reduce the difficulties these reductions may create. The rate cuts in fiscal year 12 base budget were redistributed so providers who are more reliant on state revenue are not excessively burdened. In addition, over $12 million of one-time funding in fiscal year 11 through Senate Bill 190 will be made available in fiscal year 12 in order to provide temporary relief to all providers for the rate reductions. We have increased funding to the Medicaid program so that we may continue to serve over 83,000 children, over 9,000 elderly, and over 12,000 disabled adults without affecting their eligibility or the services they receive. This budget will be the new norm for our state. The reset button has been pressed. South Dakota will now be better positioned to address both our short and long-term challenges. Hopefully, we will face easier choices in the future. So I ask today for your support of House Bill 1251. Lead by example and demonstrate to the nation that we take our legislative responsibilities seriously and we will make decisions, no matter how difficult, that will protect and ensure the continuation of both our core values and the principles that we guide our lives. God bless this institution and God bless South Dakota. Mr. Speaker, members of the body, thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks? Representative Dennard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members of the body. I'm going to open a little bit different this morning with my remarks as far as House Bill 1251. My alarm went off this morning, ladies and gentlemen, probably the latest alarm I've ever had through this legislative session because of our Chair Wink and his driving force. But, ladies and gentlemen, when my alarm went off this morning, I hit the TV button and the news came on, and before that time I did not realize the problems that was happening with the earthquake and the tsunami in the Japan area. Ladies and gentlemen, we have personal problems, we have state problems, and then there's problems like that. I was just devastated as I watched the pictures float across the screen and the problems and probably the future problems that are going to hit the West Coast and the Hawaiian Islands. So please keep them people in your thoughts. Chair Wink opened up with some thanks, and I want to do the same thing. I have to give a lot of thanks to my wife, Peggy, that's been with me through all these years of service. The second group I want to give thanks to is the voters in District 2 that have put their confidence in me for several years to come out to Pierre and work and represent them and all the people of South Dakota. I am not going to list the names, but I want to thank Mr. Fry and all his LRC staff that I've worked with for so many years and their diligence and patience with me. And then also Mr. Dilges, should probably start with Governor Dugard, but Mr. Dilges and his staff and the financial end of it. As we started this year, from former Governor Round's presentation in December about the budget and the conditions we were in, we all knew that it was going to be a tough year. When we came to Pierre in January, the Tuesday in January, and a week or so later when Governor Dugard gave his budget, I think we all sat back and was giving our thoughts of how we're going to get through this. I sat in the Appropriations Committee, and Chair Wick brought up the fact that I had more years of service than the rest of the members combined, and I said, though, he didn't say what I said totally. I told him that, but I said, I don't know if that's a good deal or a bad deal. But I really enjoyed the process of the Appropriations Committee. I have all the years I've been there. Chair Wink, thank you. Thank you, the rest of the majority party members on the Appropriations Committee. And a special thank you to my little partner, Ms. Representative Wismer. She sets and keeps me on track a lot of times. I hope my knowledge is rubbed off a little bit on Representative Wismer as we go forward. The appropriation process, as Chair Wink stated, was tough. We listened to all departments. We came through the committee issue as we took every department as we went forward. Chair Wink gave all the figures. There's no sense in me reporting them, repeating the figures that he gave to you as far as the budget process. The numbers came together as always, and we have to have a balanced budget when we go home. Today, I myself and my caucus members are not really pleased with the outcome, but I'm sure some of your people over in the majority side of the aisle are not totally satisfied with the outcome and the funding of basically I had in my list the providers, number one, number two, K-12 education, probably number three and four then is higher ed and state employees. We're not happy, and I know you're not happy, but we have to do what we have to do. I wished we could have been better and did better, but as the balanced budget, and not at this time looking for any additional revenue sources, I think we have to be pleased as we go home and tell our people that we have the balanced budget, but I have to go home and tell people also that I wished I could have did more for education, and maybe in the future we will. I'm going to close at this time, and again, thank you to all of the people in this body that have respected me so much and showed that every day. Thank you, and God willing, we'll see you all next year.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks? Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have an amendment at the desk.
That'll be 1251 ML.
That's correct.
Has it been distributed?
Yes, it has.
You wish to move it at this time?
Yes, I would.
Lucas' motion has been moved and seconded. It's open for discussion. Are there any remarks?
Mr. Speaker, may I speak to the amendment and the bill as well?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I realize this amendment was offered and defeated in the Appropriations Committee yesterday when the committee finished their work on House Bill 1251. However, I believe this is an important enough idea that it needs to be presented here on the House floor today. It's not that I expect this amendment to pass, but I believe awareness needs to be given to the idea of using more of the interest earnings from the Education Enhancement Trust Fund to enhance education. A vote on this idea today will give some significance to its value. Additionally, this is an idea that can and should be worked on and brought back next year to the legislature. Today will likely be the last time that we as a legislative body talk about education funding for the state until the start of the 2012 session, which will begin on January 10th, 2012. I will turn 61 on that day, and I would consider it a special birthday present to see a bill pre-filed in 2012 that will address the revenue problem for education in South Dakota. An even better present would be to have the governor present a plan in his State of the State address to reduce the cuts for education that are in House Bill 1251. Doing this would definitely allow me to sleep better at nights during the legislative session. And I know many of you also had sleepless nights as we spent most of the session pondering on the consequences to the deep cuts, in particular to education. Some of the consequences to the education cuts will be immediate, and others will not be noticed for years. The school board for the district that my wife works at has already voted to reduce administrative staff. And I will expect that at the April meeting, teaching staff will be give notices through reduction in force. By law, all tenured teachers need to be notified of not having a job next year by April 15th. And I realize for some of you, the term tenured is not necessarily a positive term, but it simply gives a date and time and a place in which a professional teacher must be notified they will no longer have a job and to be given reasons why. When a school district receives 8.8% less in state aid from the previous year, that is a reason that can be used to fire a teacher. Non-tenured teachers and classified staff can be notified later at the end of the school year or even during the summer that their job or position will not be available next year. Other consequences to the 8.8 reduction in state aid will be a reduction in programs and an increase in class size. I would expect some elective courses like art, music, PE, family and consumer sciences, agriculture education, and technology education to be cut. Class sizes will grow to 30 to 35 per class in many of our schools. These cuts will rebase education funding, as I indicated, to the 2006-2007 funding levels. This is an 8.8 step backwards in the state aid to education formula. Next year, when we come back, any increases to education on the Consumer Price Index will be based off of that 2006-2007 funding level. However, in these past 5 years, schools' expenses have continued to rise. Over this time frame, electricity and utility costs have increased 25 to 30%. Diesel fuel for the school buses has doubled in the past 5 years to just under $4 per gallon today, and that continues to go up almost every week. Health insurance premiums for schools have increased in the neighborhood of 10 to 20% annually, and for example, the Brookings School District alone had a 35% increase just last year for its staff group of teachers and educational support personnel. Another consequence to the education budget cut will be to undo the 30% property tax reductions that were given in 1996 and 1997. Both of the Democrat candidates for governor in 1994, Jim Beddoe and Bill Janklow, campaigned on a platform to reduce property taxes by 30%. Senate Bill 152, as many of you are aware of, froze the property taxes, which will result in an increased burden for the property taxpayers in South Dakota. And with the looming opt-outs, it will only put more of a burden on local property taxpayers to fund our local schools. Now, getting to the amendment, using the Educational Enhancement Fund, which has earned $52 million in interest this past year, would take $36 million of that $52 million.
Jones yields.
Thank you. And use that interest for a one-time payment to our K-12 schools. We can't make it permanent because we don't know how this trust fund will continue to grow. However, it will still meet the constitutional requirement of a 4% payout to the general fund and will not spend a dime of the principal earnings from the Education Enhancement Trust Fund, which had a value of $382 million as of January 31st of this current year. All of our trust funds have been performing quite well, mostly due to the expertise of the South Dakota Investment Council. The total balance of the trust funds has increased from $750 million to $850 million in just the last 6 months. This summer, the legislature, through the executive board, will reward the chief investment officer of the investment council and his staff for their great performance as investors. This will result in thousands of dollars in performance bonuses for these individuals, and I support doing this. The question is, why should we not then likewise reward our teachers, administrators, and educational support personnel who year after year deliver student scores that are at the top or near the top when compared to other states in the nation? Ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to vote yes on the amendment presented to House Bill 1251. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remarks? Representative Sly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This year, the legislature has passed several bills to help school districts as the state faces unprecedented times. Senate Bill 111 extended the sunset for more flexibility with capital outlay dollars. House Bill 1208 addressed mandates that could be repealed to help schools use their funds more efficiently. Senate Bill 152 increased the per-student allocation by almost $67 over the governor's recommended cut. In addition, House Bill 1110 gave a one-time increase of an additional $97 per-student allocation to K-12 schools. Instead of the proposed 10% cut, the FY 2012 general fund cut to K-12 will be 6.6%, and the FY 2012 overall cut to K-12 will be 3.7%. That is a net result of House Bill 1110 and Senate Bill 152. Other years, the legislature might have been trying to decide how to spend extra dollars these last days of session. Oftentimes, those decisions resulted in extra dollars to education. Instead, this year, that extra time was spent exploring ways to minimize the impact of the cuts. School districts that have already started the process of doing a methodical and purposeful approach to the anticipated cuts are well on their way to handle the final funding in this bill. The added benefit is that those districts have had the opportunity to evaluate and explore what the greatest priorities are in their school district. Private businesses, corporations, and individual families have already taken steps to address their own revenue shortfall by cutting back, prioritizing, and making decisions. The state has taken similar steps this session. Stakeholders in the state of South Dakota, in other words, recipients of state general fund dollars, are sharing in the financial challenges we face as a state. Is there a ripple effect? Absolutely. However, I have confidence in the school leaders, their staff, and the communities that they can take the necessary steps at the local level to evaluate each situation and make sound decisions. I would caution using the trust funds as they are still in the process of recovering from the recession when they did lose a lot of money that was already in those funds. So please resist the proposed amendment 1251ML. Thank you.
Thank you. Further remarks, Representative Cronin.
I respectfully call the previous question.
All those in favor calling the question signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Question being roll call has been requested. Is he supported? He is supported. Question being, Representative Lucas, motion to amend. All those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
Clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 21, nays 48.
Lucas motion having failed to receive majority vote of the members elect, hereby declared lost. Further remarks? Representative Wismer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have an amendment at the desk.
Is that 1251-UY?
Yes, it is.
Has it been distributed?
Yes, it has.
Would you like to move it at this time?
I would, please.
Wismer motion have been moved in seconds. Up for consideration, Representative Wismer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment, too, was acted upon in Appropriations Committee. It would be an amendment to transfer $15 million from the Health Care Trust Fund for the purpose of increasing funding from providers. The money would be set aside strictly for health care. It is only the interest. It does not dip into the principal. And it would help us soften the blow of the Medicaid cuts. One of the arguments against this action has been that if we use this money now, it won't be there to make money for us in the future. I don't think it's the role of government to put money in the bank to earn money to live on, even if those funds do represent one-time pots of money that the state came into. You know, it really wasn't very many years ago, less than 15, I believe, that South Dakota didn't have these trust funds, and somehow we survived 100 years of statehood without them. I've really had quite enough of this taking the money out of circulation and putting it in the government coffers nonsense. That isn't normally what government does, but that is exactly what we're doing with the trust funds. Instead, we should take the money out of government coffers and put it into the pockets of the $9 an hour nurses' aides in your local nursing home or employees at your local community support provider who are putting in overtime every week because their employer operates at a 40% annual employee turnover level because of the poor working conditions at those at their job. Yes, this is a one-time fix, just like each of the last several years' budgets have been, because this state needs to spend the year figuring out how it's going to address these needs on an ongoing basis. It needs to figure out how we're going to make up for declines in several of our major revenue sources, cigarette tax, video lottery, bank franchise, and reaching back a few years, the inheritance tax repeal that was never addressed. We need to figure out how to start paying more of our own bills when the federal government finally decides to quit paying them. On APPROPES, we saw many of our essential functions, how many of them are covered by federal dollars. And we certainly saw how in this tighter budget year, somehow our departments managed to squeeze a little more out of federal grants to replace what we used to pay for ourselves. That will probably end sooner rather than later. At the beginning of session, when my friends and family would ask me what I was going to do down here, I told them I was just going to make sure we all knew we had choices. My amendment today is one of the choices that we have. We don't have to give up $20 million of federal money in order to save $15 million of our own and pull $35 million out of the medical provider community. We have resources, but we are refusing to use them. Because this year, their use doesn't fit the script. Because using them wouldn't allow us to accomplish the ideological goal of resetting government back 10%, no matter what the consequences. The discussion needs to be in terms of what should government do and how best can it be done, not whatever we're doing we can do for 10% less. That is not a responsible way to govern. And I would appreciate your support of this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Representative Mosier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable members of the body. Well, I respect where this amendment comes from. I say that because I know that it comes from a place of passion, and I know that it comes from a genuine sense of caring for those who receive our services. I don't fundamentally believe, and I don't believe that most in this body fundamentally believe, that trust fund dollars should be used for one-time expenditures. And that's what this amendment asks us to do. I might be inclined to go against my better judgment if I felt we had a legislature that didn't care about addressing the challenges we face as it relates to Medicaid going forward. I might be inclined to go against my better judgment if I thought we had a governor who didn't care about addressing the challenges we face as it relates to Medicaid going forward. But I don't believe those things are true. I've seen the passion in this body, in the way we've talked about Medicaid now and in the future over the course of the last 2 months. I've seen the passion about addressing these issues in a meaningful way now. And I believe that at no other time in the history of our second floor have we had a governor and a staff with more desire to address these challenges long term and with more experience needed to meet those challenges than what we're blessed to have right now. And I would be remiss to say that I might go against my better judgment if I thought we didn't have Medicaid providers in this state who could handle the job and who were passionate about addressing the needs that we face. But we do have those Medicaid providers in our state. And I believe this body has been receptive to what they've expressed to us over the last 2 months. We've found money to address their short-term needs, money that's also leveraged over $16 million in federal funds for this fiscal year. Spending $15 million out of trust funds would be the easiest thing in the world to do. It would probably make me feel better for a short time. It would be instant gratification. But that money would not address the fundamental long-term challenges that we face as a state. It'll be hard. It'll take a lot of work. But I am convinced that we have a legislature, an executive branch, and healthcare professionals in this state that are committed to doing what's needed to meet the challenges we face and to continue to improve the way we deliver healthcare services to our citizens who need it most. Members, I would ask that you resist the amendment before you and pass the bill out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully call the previous question.
All those in favor of calling the question, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Question before us, Representative, roll call has been requested. Is he supported? He is supported. Thank you. Question being Representative Wismer's motion to amend. All those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Representatives Dennard, Elliott, and Sigdestad. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
Clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 20, nays 49.
Wismer motion having failed to receive majority vote of the members elect hereby declared lost. Further remarks?
Speaker.
Representative Fargin.
I would like to thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the President pro temp for upholding the great history of the House of Representatives in this great state of South Dakota. I believe with your leadership in this great body, let us all be heard on many important issues facing South Dakota. I would also like to thank the Republican leadership for being open, respectful, and honest to myself and to the Democratic House Caucus. Our good working relationship with the Republican leadership made this year productive on many issues that we faced, and I want them to know I appreciate them for that. Coming into this year, I didn't know what to expect, being the assistant Democratic leader. Looking at the state with the structural deficit and working with the governor, who took a lot of options to solve the budget off the table before we even sat down to have a discussion. With all that, I knew it was going to be a struggle. But this body did a lot of good things and passed a lot of good bills throughout this year, and I'm grateful for those. Then we took Governor Dugard's extreme 10% budget cuts and started to get to work. We first focused on the state's bureaucracy and gutted them anywhere between 10 and 22%, something that the Democratic caucus has been saying for years needed to be done, and we finally did it. And then we turned to education and Medicaid, two areas that are very sensitive and affects everyone's lives across South Dakota. There were many ideas that were vetted, and we've seen a couple of them today that would eliminate the cuts, but they were all defeated. I also want to talk a little bit about next year's budget. After we cut our children's education this year by 8.6%, and we cut our Medicaid providers anywhere from 3% to 11.5%. How do we set up for next year's budget? If you like it or not, we used a lot of one-time money this year to balance the budget with no plan for the future. What is going to happen when some of our children's schools and our grandparents' medical providers close? What is going to happen when we take $127 million of South Dakota's money out of the South Dakota economy? What is going to happen when possible thousands of people lose their jobs? Again, what's going to happen when we come back here next year? I'll tell you what's going to happen. We're going to have to cut our budget again, or we're going to have to raise fees and taxes to cover those costs. Believe me, we all are going to want to give increases to education, Medicaid, state employees, the judicial system, and everywhere else, but we won't be able to. Instead of facing our budget straight up, we shifted money around. We took federal money and we filled in our gaps of our budget, and we lied to ourselves when we did it. Next year, we have to replenish the money in those accounts in state government first so we can survive. And that's before we even look about giving increases to everyone else. I'm going to end with an example. Just picture your child, your grandchild, or in my case, my nephew, that started kindergarten last year. If we make these 8.6% cuts in education today, that child will not get the same amount of state support of education until he or she graduates from high school in 2023, as that child did back in 2011. It will take that long just to match what we did this year and last year to cuts in our education. And that's if only we fund education of an unheard of 4% increase every year starting in next year's budget, which we know that won't happen. I've been in Pierre as representative for 3 years now, and I've been out here for 3 years before that as a part-time or full-time lobbyist. And this is the first time I believe that this legislature will be making this state worse off than before we came out here. Please vote red on this bill, and let's get back to work and fix the budget for the future of this great state of South Dakota. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. House Bill 1251 is a culmination of responsible decisions that we have brought forth. Being in the majority party has not been easy. We've got the targets on our back, and the criticisms are coming our way. However, we have brought forth this plan. The other party never really brought a plan, a real specific plan. What did they propose? Spending our reserves and trust funds. That's just the easy way out. Spending our emergency funds for ongoing expenses. That kind of quick fix approach is exactly what will bring us back here next year, and we will have to decide who we will be cutting again, and whose salaries we can freeze. Raising revenues. Some have suggested that we put out there for the voters to increase their sales tax. The people of South Dakota have elected us to come here to Pierre and make the tough decisions. They did not ask us to pass the buck. And an economic downturn is the worst time to increase taxes. The other side never proposed any additional cuts. In fact, today they've spoken against many of the cuts in this bill. It is sometimes easy to sit and stand on the sidelines and not make the tough, practical decisions. It is easy to criticize and to oppose, but it is not necessarily easy to lead. What we have done here this year in the majority party is what the people sent us here to do. We said that we would rein in spending and keep taxes low. We made good on those promises. Throughout this process, I am proud to say that we have kept not only the taxpayers, but the tax spenders in mind. We have fixed the structural deficit in 1 year while providing some one-time funds to help education and Medicaid providers have a softer landing. I'm proud to say that we made real, practical decisions and delivered this budget that reins in the spending and keeps taxes low. I urge all of you to be proud of what we've done here this year. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, members of the House.
Thank you, Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate it. Well, first of all, I do want to also thank my fellow leaders in this House, especially my good friend, Representative Fargin, if you'll allow me a name briefly, and all my Democratic colleagues who I think have operated so well. And it's tough to be in the minority party, tough especially this year for minority or majority party. And I really appreciate the way my colleagues on the Democratic side and our friends on the Republican side have conducted themselves. And I think a large part of that, the credit has to go to the Speaker, to the Majority Leader, who have, I think, really worked hard to adopt an atmosphere of civility and collegiality that's been fostered both inside this chamber and outside the chamber, and that's really made a difference. Especially appreciate my counterpart, the Majority Leader from Rapid City. He's a true gentleman, and I think he's shown it every day in his leadership in this House. And every time he says, I respectfully and regretfully call the question, I think he really means it. He really does do it respectfully and regretfully. So he's been a real gentleman, and I've enjoyed working with him. I also want to thank the citizens, the private citizens of South Dakota, who've spoken out all through this session. I think, again, with civility, but spoken loud and clear on where they think South Dakotans should be going. My message to them, if any of them are listening or reading our reports, my message to them is that the battle isn't over, it's only begun. We're fixing nothing in this session, nothing at all. We've heard a lot of proud talk about how we're fixing a structural deficit or reining in spending or doing this or doing that. You know, we all know it's a bunch of baloney. Nothing has been fixed. We'll be back here next year with a bigger mess on our hands than we faced January 1st. And as I hear the budget discussion today, I just think back to last October, a scant 4 months ago, October, the general election campaign, and I wonder, what we're hearing today sounds nothing like October, nothing like when we were all out campaigning. And I travel South Dakota a lot. I heard the radio ads, heard your radio ads. I saw the print ads, and I tried to attend campaign speeches and read about them in the newspapers. The discussion today in no way resembles the October election. Did you hear, did anybody hear a campaign on the college campuses and say, hey kids, I'm going to raise your tuition 8%? Did anybody do that? Did anybody go door to door and knock it on doors and knock on a senior citizen's door and say, I think we can raise your property taxes? Which this budget clearly does. It's intended to raise the property taxes several different ways by shifting costs to counties, by encouraging opt-outs. It will raise property taxes. Did anybody go around visiting the schools and say, hey, I think we could lay off maybe 1,500 teachers or so? Now we've modified that a little bit, but we're clearly on a path to doing real damage to our K-12 schools. Anybody campaign on the idea that we should raise the health care costs, especially for private pay patients, private pay residents of our nursing homes? This budget will be a huge increase. And again, we've softened it a little bit. Can you soften a hard rock? I don't know, but we've softened it a little bit, and we're floating all kinds of numbers around. But we all know the bottom line is we're going to do real damage to health care costs for consumers. Probably will raise health insurance premiums. And it shifts costs to counties in all sorts of different ways, to counties, to school districts, to consumers. This is a bad budget for South Dakota. If this is what you campaigned on, and if you did, I missed the campaign. If this is what you campaigned on, then you should vote yes on the budget. If you didn't campaign that way, then you should vote no. And it's not too late. We have one more vote. One more vote this session. And it can make a big, big difference. Because if you vote yes, you're going to hurt our economy. You're going to hurt our schools. You're going to hurt our youth. You're going to hurt people who care, who depend on South Dakota state government for health care costs. We'll do a lot of damage if we vote yes on this budget today. Still time. I'm willing to stay. I know it's Friday, midday. I'm willing to stay all day and all night to make this thing better. The revenues are here. Democrats have fought for cuts in government. We've supported many of your cuts. We've fought hard to cut corporate welfare, which I think is probably the biggest boondoggle in government. Tens of millions of dollars being wasted there in that one area alone. We've argued, I think there can be an honest philosophical argument about whether or not earnings from trust funds are one-time windfalls or ongoing earnings. That's a legitimate philosophical argument, but we're in a recession. We're in a recession. We're trying to move our way out of a recession in a fragile economy. And if there was ever a time to use earnings off trust funds rather than raise taxes for South Dakotans or hurt our schools and raise property taxes, this is the time to spend those earnings. A no vote will give us a little time this afternoon to make a better budget. So if you campaign for higher property taxes, higher health care costs, higher tuition rates, vote yes. If you campaign in a way that South Dakota state government should be working toward better schools, stronger economy, rural development, all the things that we talked about in this campaign, then you got to vote no. We got to go back to work and make a better budget. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the body, well, as some of you may know, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And despite what the Packers did to my team in the Super Bowl, I remain a steadfast fan of Coach Vince Lombardi. And there's a wonderful book about Coach Lombardi. It's called When Pride Still Mattered. I think there are a lot of instructive messages in the book and in the title alone. I don't think Coach Lombardi would be proud of his adopted state and the conduct of a certain minority party in leaving that state instead of legislating. I'm grateful to say and proud to say that we don't act that way in South Dakota. I commend the minority party. I commend the majority party and how we've conducted business this year. I said early in my caucus, a quote from Paul's letter to the Romans, to outdo oneself in honor. And I feel we've had that here this year on both sides of the aisle. And I'm appreciative of the Democrat leadership in doing that, in being honorable, being civil, and being professional. I especially appreciate the relationship I've developed with the minority leader and the assistant minority leader. And I really am grateful for the way they've handled everything this year. I think that's permeated throughout the House in our discourse. It's been very professional and mature, and I do appreciate it. I also want to thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the way you've run this House. There's been times where it's been a little heated, but you've handled it with aplomb and humor, and I appreciate that very much, as well as you, Karen, and your staff. It's always comforting to know you're there to back up the Speaker and to keep us all in line. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate my leadership team. Representative Mosier, Representative Hoffman, Representative Sly, Representative Wick as my whips, and my dutiful assistant, Representative Cronin. I appreciate the humor we've had, the moments we've shared, and the work you've done. I appreciate the work of my intern, Linnea Mueller. I've always appreciated her quick comments when I haven't voted the right way, and her correcting me. I very much appreciate everything else you've done. But mostly today, I would like to show my appreciation for the appropriators. Back to Lombardi. His 1936 Fordham University team had a moniker on the offensive line. They were called the Seven Blocks of Granite for their steadfast resolve and their strength and their durability. I think we have 9 blocks of granite in appropriations. We have individuals who just go to work. There's not drama. There's not theater. They just roll up their sleeves and do what they have to do in a professional, mature manner. I would like all of us to show our appreciation for them with a round of applause. And it starts with the gentleman to my right, Representative Wink. He epitomizes what being a good legislator should be. He's professional, honest, fair, forthright. He does what he needs to do, and you know he's going to do what he needs to do. And Representative Wink, I've had a wonderful experience working with you this year and getting to know you better. I'm glad you're appropriations chair. I think you've handled it the right way. And I think the whole proceeding has reflected that. So thank you. So what have we accomplished? Well, most notably, what we're accomplishing is what has been stated. We're getting to fiscal parity in 1 year without raising revenue, without dipping into reserves. We listened to those who asked us to minimize the harm. We listened to the Medicaid providers, and we minimized their harm. We did the same for education. We did it in a framework that was realistic and sustainable. It would be easy to take other paths and other courses, but that's not what we've done. We've rolled up our sleeves, we've gone to work in a difficult, difficult situation, and made hard decisions that are going to impact people. And we're doing so. How can we do this? I hear people saying, well, we can do so because of this. Unlike some of the comments I hear from the minority party, I believe the majority party has a deep faith and confidence in the citizens of South Dakota. These are not the darkest times this state has had, nor probably will it be the darkest times we've had. I'm comfortable, as are my colleagues in the majority party, in relying on the resilience, the commitment, and the effort of South Dakota citizens to weather this storm. That's how we can make the cuts and make the hard decisions we had to make. Because we know South Dakotans will persevere, they'll redouble their efforts, and they'll do what they need to do. One of my favorite quotes, back to Lombardi, is this. The measure of who we are is what we do with what we have. And to me, that epitomizes South Dakotans. Self-reliant, hardworking people who do with what they have. That's what this budget represents. I also think this party has a lot more optimism about South Dakota and where we're going. And that, again, gets back to who South Dakotans are. In this time of spring, a lot of calving is going on around the state. I'm not an ag guy. I've only participated in calving one time. Hope to never do it again. But these ranchers and farmers go through an incredibly arduous process that I know they don't look forward to. It's hard work. But they do it because they know they're optimistic about what's going to happen from the fruit of that process. And that's where we are. I'm optimistic that the fruit of what we have done with this budget will bear good things. We'll turn the page, we'll right our ship, we'll reset the button, as Representative Wink said, and we'll stand for a better day. So I think those things are what carry us through these difficult decisions. optimism and confidence in South Dakota. I have that, and I'm confident about it. I would ask that you just keep in mind that we didn't come here to do the popular thing. We came here to do the right thing, and we've done that. I thank all of you for your steadfast devotion to this process, to this body, and the citizens of South Dakota. I mean that for everyone in here, both sides of the aisle. The process works. I'm pleased to be a part of it, and I would ask your support for House Bill 1251. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Carson.
I respectfully call the question.
All those in favor of calling the question signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion carries. The question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1251. All those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote. See, we have some guests with us today from the Dakota Christian High School. On behalf of Representatives Van Gerpen and Klocek, welcome to the House of Representatives. Please stand if you're here. Also, if the doctor of the day is here, if Dr. Petrosco, we'd like to welcome you for your service today. Thank you for coming.
Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
Clerk, will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 46, nays 23.
House Bill 1251, having received majority vote of the members elect, hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct. For those in the audience and those listening at home, that bill is now being delivered to the Senate. If I could have your attention, please, I'm going to turn the floor over to Representative Lucas in just a minute. If I could have Representative Lust and Representative Hunhoff up at the front desk here, and if I could have all the interns to please come up to the front. Representative Lucas.
Ladies and gentlemen of the House, we're going to take a few moments here and pay some special respect and appreciation to the 13 interns that worked so hard for us this legislative session. As a member of the E-Board, it is my privilege to be a part of the subcommittee that selects the interns. And I would especially like to thank Dave Ortbaum and LRC staff who went through the process of screening the applicants and interviewing them. All the interns had to apply for the job and had to go through an interview process to be here. The thing about being an intern is they do everything we do, except for they can't vote, they can't debate in committee or on the floor, and they don't get their names quoted in the paper or on Twitter unless they do something they shouldn't do. With that, as I read off their names, I'm going to ask Representative Hunoff and Orlusk, depending on which party they're for, to say some brief comments regarding their performance. And they received a nice certificate. I had hoped there had been a $1,000 bill in here or a $1,000 check, but instead we'll say some nice remarks for you. So first, I'd like to have J.R. Barham come up here. Okay. Matthew Blake. Sarah Burt. Cody Clark. Jordan Feist. Brandy Hamlin. Michael Kendall. Lena Mueller.
Lania.
Ryan Swab. Kelsey Simonson. Brian Simpson. Sylvia Topchipa. And Clayton Walkner. Okay, let's give them a big round of applause here. Before I turn it over to Representative Lust and Representative Hunoff, I just remind you that all of you as legislators received a survey evaluation form for the interns, and I would ask that you complete that and turn it into LRC. That helps us with the e-board to better prepare the process of selecting the interns and seeing that they're adequately prepared. Many of them come in here not knowing what to expect, and that gives us a little bit of background to give them some preparations when they go through the application interview process. Thank you very much. Representatives?
Thank you, Representative Lucas. Well, it's always a great thing to be associated with young people of our state, and it's also been fun for me to see how the interns that I've worked with develop from the first day they come in. A little bit intimidated, a little bit nervous, to now confident in the process, more confident in themselves, probably less confident in the legislature. But it's really been quite an experience to engage them in discussions about the issues we talk about, and then some of their curious ideas on different topics. It's a two-way street. I think I've learned as much from these interns as hopefully they've learned from me, and it's been a growth experience hopefully for all of us. And I very much appreciate everything you do. You make this engine work a lot more smoothly, a lot better than it would without you, and that's a commendation to you all. So thank you very much.
You know, it was just like about, 8 or 9 weeks ago that we all came out here, and remember those fast-paced first days when you're all so busy, and it's pretty easy to just, you're trying to get to know your fellow legislators, and you kind of, I feel bad, you kind of ignore the LRC staff, and I think our House staff, Karen and her gang, and they do everything so effortlessly that we just think it's just all on cruise control. But Karen especially does such a great job, the LRC, the committee staffs, and the pages and the interns. And the interns especially, the LRC and the committee staffs, they kind of come and go and they know the process a little bit. But the interns, they come out here just like a freshman legislator, except they're, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. And just think they leave the safety and the comfort of a campus community, teachers and friends, and they come out here knowing nobody. And I can't imagine what it must actually be like. It must really be a difficult situation. And we're all rushing here and there and everywhere trying to get our bills written and meet the other legislators and do all this, and we probably ignore them for a little bit. But I don't think for long, because they're such quality young men and women that pretty soon they start to make an impression on you. Even if you're a real jerk and you pretend like they're not even around there, pretty soon you realize, hey, there's some pretty special people here. And it's every year that they're always special. This year is no exception. Just some really fine young leaders that we've enjoyed working with. And I hope you all come back many, many times. I hope it's been a good experience, and I hope you come back and, as LRC staff or as lobbyists or hopefully as legislators, because every single one of you, those I've gotten to know, every single one of you can do the job. And we just appreciate all you've done to make this session a success. Thank you so much.
Thank you, interns. Back to work. Any announcements? The House will be at ease until we receive the report back from the Senate. And they are in recess now till 11 o'clock, I understand, so it will be sometime.